It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Thank you for joining us for a Thursday edition. It's hard to believe that spring has sprung. I'm not sure my grammar's, well, I mean, from South Carolina, that's probably as good as my grammar is going to get. Spring has sprung, I guess. We're in spring. Mary Langston and I were just talking about how beautiful the weather has been, unless you have allergies, in which case, I guess the weather's still beautiful. It's just, it extracts a toll from you to be outside, but hopefully she's still with us. She's so young and healthy and doesn't have any bad habits. I would think she's still here. Are you with us?
I'm still here, and you're right. Spring is here, and we now have longer days. So lots to look forward to in March Madness as well.
Yep, March Madness. And I guess it was yesterday my beautiful wife came in to my office and said, "Why do I hear Shane Beamer's voice? This is spring and not the fall." Because I listen to all of his press conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And spring football practice has begun at the University of South Carolina.
So, I didn't know that.
Yes. So I got to listen to his introductory press conference. And, you know, when you're as old as I am, you don't hear great. So apparently the volume was up high enough that Terry could hear the interview, even though she was in the front yard. She could still hear it. So she came and asked me why she, every Monday night in the fall, every Saturday night, and every Wednesday night, I listen to Shane's press conferences. So she just is very, very familiar with his voice. He's one of the nicest people in the world. I don't know why she doesn't want to hear his voice, but she doesn't. So, yeah, all that to say, spring football's here, too. And the Masters is right around the corner.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to look forward to.
There is. It's a beautiful time of the year. So I'm thankful to be alive. And I'm thankful that you let me participate in your podcast with you.
Thank you for letting me participate in your podcast. And we have a lot of great questions today. Actually, 3 of the 4 are sports related. So are you ready to get started?
You know why that is? Because people that listen to our podcast know that I don't know anything about anything else. So,
no, they're interested to hear what you're going to say, I'm sure.
Yeah. So there are no math questions?
Not today, but we can always get those if you want one.
Nobody's asked me to divide fractions. I find that shocking that they would ask me about sports and not about, like, I don't know, chemistry. But I'm grateful, whatever they are, I'm grateful for them.
Well, good. And I'm glad they're not asking me about sports or math questions. So we'll start with a question from Charles in California, who writes, "In your role as a prosecutor, you held significant power in determining who to charge and how to pursue cases. How did you guard against potential biases or overreach? And what safeguards did you implement to maintain transparency and accountability?"
Those are all great questions. You know, prosecutors, I'm actually like co-teaching sort of a criminal justice class right now with Sharia. Sharia Clark. She's the lead teacher, but I fill in from time to time. And I just got to telling the students at Wofford, the prosecutors have more power than anyone else in the criminal justice system or continuum or however you want to refer to it. They have an enormous amount of power, which is why you see people who want to change the criminal justice system but don't want to do it legislatively. You've seen the advent of these so-called progressive prosecutors. We'll save that for another day, but that's because they figured out prosecutors have enormous discretion, power, influence, whatever word you want to use. So Charles is right to acknowledge that. And then he, you know, wants to know how you guard against that. The bias part was never an issue for me. I'm so thankful and lucky in the way that I was brought up and the life experiences that I had as a teenager, really working. I was one of a very few white employees in the place where I worked in the summer times. So racial bias is just never, if anything, I had to guard against being tougher on kids who had every advantage in the world and still messed up. That's where I had to check my bias, is wealthy people's kids that had every advantage and every opportunity and no reason whatsoever to have engaged in any criminality at all, but yet they did so. Or yet there was an expectation that, you know, that their status could get them out of it. And I'm not talking about murder or robbery or any, I'm talking about offenses where discretion plays a role in whether or not to put somebody in a diversion program. So bias has never been an issue in my life. I wasn't brought up that way. And that's not something I've had to guard against. Overreach is a little different. Every prosecutor thinks that the case in front of him or her is the most important one in the world. And that defendant is the worst defendant and needs to be sent away forever. I think the lesson I learned there, I was a federal prosecutor before I was a state prosecutor, and I shared a desk, not an office, a desk, literally a desk, with a guy named Beatty Ashmore, who is a friend of mine to this very day. He sat on one side of the desk and I sat on the other. So I spent all day working on cases with Beatty and looking at him and talking to him. And he's a handsome devil too, by the way. But, you know, he could hear my conversations and I could hear his, and he heard me talking to a defense attorney when I was a brand new federal prosecutor. And he heard me insisting on 10 years in one case. And then he heard me in another conversation with a defense attorney make an offer of either, I think what I said was either 5 or 10 years. I think I said it like that, Mary Langston. Yeah, you know, I said, you know, yeah, well, I'll think about it. I'll make an offer of 5 or 10 years. And I hung up the phone and I went back to work, and Beatty said, are you open to a little bit of advice? He'd been a prosecutor for a lot longer than I'd been one. And I had tremendous respect for him and still do. And he said, it's okay to be the high side of fair, but you got to be fair. And in 10 years for the case that you just described is not fair. It's not even the high side of fair. He said, there's a temptation to believe that whatever case you're working on, whatever defendant you're working on, is the most important, the worst facts, the worst case. You got to take a bigger view. You got to seek advice and counsel from people who've done it for longer. And then he said, on the second conversation you had, he said, this would have been 1995, I guess it was, when I had this conversation with Beatty. He said, where were you 5 years ago? And I said, I had just finished law school. I was clerking for a judge. I just got married, didn't have a child yet. He said, that's my point. A lot can happen in 5 years. So when you say 5 or 10 years, it just rolls off your tongue like it's nothing, like there's no difference. There's a big difference when you're talking about the person that's going to be serving those 5 years. So if you think 5 years might be the right number, the fair sentence, then that's what you should offer. Not, you know, 5 or 10. There's a big difference between the two. And he was right. He was right on both counts. That it's, I was on violent crime cases, Charles, I was known as being pretty tough, actually very tough. I did not like it when people hurt other people. Most of my trials were murder cases. I don't negotiate, didn't plea bargain. I'd rather lose it then plea bargain it away. Don't like it when people assault other folks, sexual assault, physical assault. The nonviolent crimes, which includes most drug cases, I think most people would tell you I was pretty fair. But I had to learn it. I had to learn what it meant to be fair. So when I ran an office, you want consistency, transparency, accountability. I remember in particular, I won't call his name because he may not want me calling his name, but we had a very, very prominent leader in the African-American community who was questioning the charge and the way that a case had been resolved when I was the district attorney. I had moved from the U.S. Attorney's office and was now the district attorney. And he called and was incredibly polite and respectful and said, I'm hearing this and I need to know whether or not this person that I represent, and when I say represent, not as a lawyer, he was the head of the NAACP. He said, I need to make sure that this person that's a member of my entity, my organization, is being treated fairly. And I said, yes, you do. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I want you to come over. I'll put you in my conference room. I'm going to give you the file. And he said, okay. I haven't had that offered to me before. I said, I'll give you the file. You can look at exactly what the allegation was, what the proof was, and how it was resolved. And he came over and he scheduled an appointment. He came over and he showed up and I put him in the conference room and I handed him the file and I said, and I'm going to leave. He said, you're not going to stay in here with me? I said, no, I'm going to let you read the file. I trust you. Read the file. When I come back in, if you think that there'd been a miscarriage of justice, tell me. He was in there for an hour. He said, thank you. I understand why you did what you did. I'm grateful that you gave me the opportunity. And that was the end of that. And then about a year later, he called again, same issue. But this time he said, I don't need to see the file. I trust you. Tell me why you did what you did. If you are willing to put your cards, or as the late, great David Stevens, a prosecutor, but a tremendous influence on Betty Ashmore and me. David Stevens said, I play face-up poker. I'm going to show you my cards. My job is not to get a conviction. My job is to do what is right. I play face-up poker. You can look at my file, and I'm still going to win if I'm supposed to win. You got to hire good people. You have to hire people that are fair. You cannot hire people that run for higher office or try to advance their career on the backs of others. And what you do for this defendant, you must do for another that is similarly situated. The book, I think, if you were to ask people, the book on me when I was a DA is that I was very, very tough on violent crime. I do not like it when people hurt other people. I was pretty fair. I think even my critics would say when it came to nonviolent economic crime, I thought the lengthy prison sentences should be reserved for those who hurt and or kill others.
Well, beautifully said, Trey, and thank you so much for answering that question. And thank you, Charles, for that thoughtful question as well. We'll answer more of your questions when we come back.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today.
We'll move into our sports questions, and the first one comes from Jonathan, who writes, as I'm watching the final round of the Players today, I wonder if you have been blessed to play the course, and if so, what is your experience on number 17 and the percentage of shots in the water versus the green?
Jonathan, I have been invited to play TPC Sawgrass. I was actually invited to play by the now governor of the state of Florida, who was a congressman at the time. And like an idiot, I said, Ron, I'll come down there and do an event for you, but I don't want to play golf. I want to come back home. So that was my one shot at playing it. I mean, I'm probably, I guess, if I really, really, really wanted to play it, maybe I could get Brett Baer or somebody to get me on, but I've never played it. So the number of balls I've hit in the water on number 17 would be zero. It looks like it's anywhere from a pitching wedge to an 8-iron, depending on where the pin is. I can tell you that I would be hitting a 9-iron no matter what and just trying to hit the middle of the green and trying to two-putt. I would not be messing around with the back part of that green. I saw so many balls hit the green and just didn't check. Those guys are so good. I mean, I played with guys that play on tour. They are so good. They are so much better than even really, really, really good amateur golfers. It is a different game. So if they're hitting the ball in the water, yes, I would hit plenty of balls in the water, but I haven't yet. I have played number 12 at Augusta, which is coming up in April. There's also a water hole. There's water on that hole, I should say. And I have not hit the ball in the water yet on that hole. I've been left and long. It's about an 8-iron from the tees that where I was fortunate to play it. But again, no pressure. I was playing it with friends. No pressure, no television. I'm not leading the Masters. The wind's not howling on Sunday afternoon. It's just a different world. So I know we sit there and look at these great golfers. And by the way, I'm a huge Scottie Scheffler fan. I also love Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler tends to play 17 pretty well. We sit there and we watch these guys that hit the ball in the water and we think, you know, how could you do that? They play a game that even elite amateur golfers are not familiar with. I just cannot tell you how good those players are. So if they're hitting the ball in the water, there's no telling. What percentage of shots would go in the water versus the green? Probably 100% if I had people watching me, because I'd be nervous. I'd make my caddy like go buy a dozen golf balls just so I could finish the hole. One of these days, maybe I will get to play 17. Maybe I will get to, you know, take my son, or maybe I'm sure Brett Baer could get me on. Maybe one of my other friends could get me on. Michael Breed probably could too, but I have not had the pleasure of playing that course yet.
It looks beautiful.
If you like water. Yeah, it is beautiful. Yeah,
there's a lot of water for sure. And if I was playing, all mine would be in the water or lost somewhere in the woods or somewhere else.
I went to Top Golf with you, and you're not even a golfer. When you have a really, really good golf swing. So,
well, that's just because you were helping me, and that's really the only reason.
No, it's because you're an athlete, and you understand that golf is literally a swing. It's not a hit. So, mm-hmm. No, I'm not sure there's any sport you couldn't play if you put your mind to it.
Well, I don't know about that, but our next question is from Chris in Delaware, who writes, what do you think about Kevin Kisner's analysis performance during the Players' Championship? So similar kind of question, same place.
I love Kevin Kisner. I love him.
He's funny. He's very sarcastic.
I love him. He is so much more fun. That is the 100% dialed back, controlled version of Kevin Kisner. I have had the pleasure of playing with him, and just me and him. And he is so much fun to be around. I love, not just because I like him. I want to be objective about it. I was not crazy about the Waste Management tournament. I thought that hole got out of control. That had nothing to do with Kisner or any of the other commentators. I just thought the crowd got out of control. Seeing Kisner commentate, to me, makes all the difference in the world. It's like listening to someone who actually knows what he or she is talking about. It's like listening to Roger Federer talk about a tennis match. because he did it at an elite level, and so did Kisner. So when they talk about what's going through a player's mind or why they do this, to me, it just has more credibility than, I mean, like Jim Nance has like a beautiful voice. I could listen to Jim Nance all day long, and he also happens to be a golfer. But he didn't play professional golf. So when people like Kisner or Trevor Immelman or Paul Azinger, any of those folks, they know what they are talking about, and that lends credibility to their analysis. So with Kisner, he is funny. He is dry and sarcastic. I think he has a really good relationship. He's quick, has a very quick wit. The thing I worry about with Kisner is if there's ever a tournament where there's not a delay between what he says and what we hear, because I don't know that the network can afford to pay all of the fines that would be incurred if there was no delay or no ability to beep what Kevin said. Because that, I have been remarkably proud of him. I don't think he has said a single word that you can't say on television since he's been doing the commentating. I cannot think of a single time that he said a word you can't say. But I know it's there, so that's why I'm nervous listening to him give the analysis. But I think he's fantastic, and I hope his playing days are not over. I mean, I know he never was the biggest guy in the world. He's, you know, incredibly talented. He's a fantastic putter, but that game is a game of length now, and I don't know how far Kevin hits the ball. I mean, he hits the ball a lot farther than I do, but relative to who he's playing against, I don't know. I hope he keeps playing. I hope he plays well, but he is entertaining, and I could listen to him commentate all day long, but I also could like just ride in the golf cart with him and listen to him. He is a very, very funny person. He's been on the podcast. He's a very funny person.
Well said, Trey, and thank you for answering that question. Our last question is from Don in California, who writes, what brand of golf clubs do you use, and which ones, if any, is or are your favorite?
I'm going to get in so much trouble here.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Let me first say thank you to Michael Breed, who sent me a set of Titleist irons a long time ago, and he also sent me Titleist wedges, and he sent me a Scotty Cameron putter. And Michael, you know I love you. Feel free to send me some more stuff. I still putt with a putter that he sent me. I have a friend that is the Titleist rep here in the area. He's a wonderful guy named Julian. Does a fantastic job for Titleist. I'm still friends with a guy who used to be the Callaway rep for this area. He left. He has another job in golf now. So at one point I was playing. I was hitting balls on a driving range with both the Titleist and the Callaway rep. We were all on the same driving range, but I play Schrixon, which is a Dunlop product, I think. I think Dunlop makes Schrixon irons. I was at a golf shop the day before my son and I were going to play in the father-son golf tournament, and I was not hitting the ball great. I was playing Titleist irons, but the irons were for better golfers like him and not for me. And I picked up this set of Schrixon, literally Mary Langston, the day before a tournament, which is like the dumbest thing in the world to do, to switch irons the day before a tournament. But I hit them really well. And I don't play as much as I used to for different reasons, but they're still in the bag. So Titleist driver with a shaft sent to me from a listener. I had a listener in Florida. She was kind enough to send me a shaft, which is still in my driver, which is Titleist. Callaway 3-wood. King Cobra hybrid. A three-iron hybrid. Schrixon irons. Callaway wedges. and a Scotty Cameron putter that Michael Breed sent to me probably 10 years ago now. And that's the bag. That's what's in the bag for me.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And you're right. Michael Breed is so kind. And it sounds like you've got some great friends who help share different products with you with golf. And sounds like some of them actually have worked for you.
Well, as you know, a friend in need is a pest. You've heard me say that many times before.
I have heard you say that.
I would
never.
That's
in my quote book of you.
Well, I hope you never publish the quote book because you've heard them all. Speaking of Kisner, I might need a 3 or 5 second delay on some of them too. But I don't ask my friends for free stuff. I mean, they're in the business of making a profit. But I think it's really cool when I get to look at it. I have a friend who owns a golf shop here in town. So you go by the golf shop. It's called Bypass Golf. All the new stuff, all the old stuff. My son and I collect putters. You know, you can only play 14 clubs at a time. And right now the Shricks on are working okay for me. I played in the tournament about a week ago with Tim Dunleavy, and we did okay. I have a ton of putters. You've been in that room before, Mary Linkson. You know how many putters we have, quite a few. But Shricks on irons for now. And, you know, if anybody feels sorry for me and knows that I've lost a few yards because I'm old and I got a bad back and a lot of other problems, somebody wants to help me upgrade, I'll be happy to send you the wiring instructions so you can wire me the money so I can actually don't do that. I had a lady call from Washington State and put a gift certificate on her credit card for me at Bypass Golf, which is the sweetest thing in the world. But I do not do that. Whoever is listening, do not do that. I have more credit built up in that store. I can't spend it for the rest of my life. So I'm great. When it comes to equipment, I love to tinker around and look at the new stuff, but I am great with what I have. So that is not me begging for clubs like I beg Brad Faxon for a putting lesson. That is not me doing that. I am content with what I have right now. And I wear a bucket hat when I play too, by the way.
That's true. You do. Different. I've seen you in a visor as well, not just a bucket hat.
I do visor.
But maybe you've transitioned to bucket hats only. I don't know.
I had to. I was sick of getting stuff cut off of me. So.
Oh, yeah.
I wear a bucket hat now, which looks about like you would imagine it looked, which is pretty bad.
No, you embrace it. And I'm sure a lot of other people do too, especially when they're out in the sun like that.
All right. Well, I appreciate everybody's questions, particularly.
Yes, that's all we have.
It's really hard for me to botch a question about what kind of clubs I play. So maybe people are just so tired of me like getting the answer wrong that they think, oh, I wonder if he could like answer a question as simple as what kind of irons do you play?
Oh, no.
Got it. Shricks on. I can barely pronounce it. I can spell it, but I can't pronounce it.
I don't think I could do either. So that's good for you.
All right. Well, I'll show them to you next time you're over here. And everybody has a great week. And your March Madness brackets hold up.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations to everybody who made it. And this is a fun time of the year. We'll see you next week.
That sounds great. We'll see y'all next week. Thank you for tuning in.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.